Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing these days?
I'm doing okay, John. I'm doing okay, all things considering. How are you?
Good, good. Enjoying this high-rate environment? I say high-rate. This is like relatively, like in the 80s and 90s, this would still be a very low-rate environment. But compared to zero, I guess anything's a lot.
Yeah, we somewhat recently helped my wife's parents sell her home in Oakland, and they bought it at a rate of, I think, 17% in 1990. So
wow.
This
there
is a
you go.
cakewalk. Yeah.
Yeah, right, right. I see people are like, oh my God, a 10-year treasury at over 4%. That's not historically that big a deal.
Not at all. I've been trying to get to explore my options to get a HELOC on my home as well for some reno work that I want to do. And the rates are either. Yeah. And my primary lender, which is Wells Fargo, does not offer HELOC anymore. And other players seem to have extremely high rates as well. So it's just not a good lending environment right now.
Have you looked at any alternatives, smaller players?
I haven't yet, but I'm gonna begin my research pretty soon.
Give our interviewees a chance, Steve. My goodness. Well, we're lucky to have with us somebody that knows a lot more about lending and banking than we do. Rebecca Bacon, the VP Head of Financial Institutions Group, joins us this week. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah, John, Steve, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, yeah. So have you had any issues getting a loan yourself?
You know, I have not. I got my mortgage mid-2021, so I'm very pleased with my 2.86 rate that I will pay off in, you know, year 29, month 11. But other than that, lending right now, I mean, you don't want to be in the borrower position just given the high interest rate world we're in.
Yeah, Powell was just saying that they're going to not be in such a rush to start lowering rates again.
I think that's why the markets tumbled, right? Yesterday?
They're always tumbling and shooting up for whatever
and rising,
reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Higher for longer. Yeah.
The roulette wheel. Yeah, higher for longer. That's right. So tell us about Upgrade and how you guys fit into this whole banking world.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I've been at Upgrade going on 5 years. And as you said, kind of managing our banks and credit unions, what we call the financial institutions team. But what Upgrade does is we are a neobank, as some may call us, and we offer mainstream U.S. consumers affordable, responsible credit products, along with some deposit products. So right at the moment, we offer personal loans, card, auto refi. We have an indirect auto program, home improvement product, as well as a travel buy now, pay later product, and then a rewards checking and high yield savings. So kind of your bread and butter financial products for your everyday consumer. We don't do any HELOC or mortgage yet.
Sorry, Steve.
Oh, man. It's interesting. So you guys, your CEO came from LendingClub, and it seems like there's sort of there's been a lot of movement in the personal finance space and the personal lending space as well. What do you think is Upgrade's sort of differentiating model here that makes it pull apart from, you know, Prosper, LendingClub, and the many other players that they seem to operate within the space?
Yeah, great question. So yeah, our executive team, a lot of the previous team at LendingClub, and the biggest differentiator, along with some lessons learned, is just not being a monoline company. LendingClub, with the kind of invention of the digital personal loan to refi credit card debt, is just not, for us, or what Upgrade wants to do, not the only way to serve the consumer. We want to be kind of top of wallet with everything that a consumer may need in terms of credit in an affordable and responsible way. Hence the many products, not just personal loans for debt consolidation, but also cards, home improvement, auto, and those other items. We want to not be that monoline company. So like I said, it's where when you're making a personal finance decision, Upgrade is a name you trust and that you're engaged with and can use kind of for that frictionless digital experience.
How have you seen the space sort of evolve in the past 5 years? Because this was a really hot space, call it 10 years ago or so. And it seems to be more, slightly more commoditized nowadays. So how has it changed?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think at least from where I sit, the most interesting thing is kind of what happened over 2020 and 2021. Like, fintech was the hottest thing in the world. Everyone wanted to be a neobank, acquire lots of customers, offer all kinds of projects. People wanted to get into the BaaS business. And I think what was an afterthought for a lot of platforms was how to monetize all of these consumers. So when you think about the foundation of fintech, you know, finance and technology, at finance and banking and general just banking credit services, the way banks make money is credit products. Everything else is ancillary, in my opinion. So I think you have a lot of kind of shops pop up with serving a potentially underbanked customer, which is great. But that's not necessarily the same customer you're going to lend to. So I think the kind of shakeout we saw over the past few years was very interesting because it's kind of a lot of interest into this space, acquiring lots of customers, but with no plan on how to monetize them. So you see kind of a few people come to the top, which I, of course, think Upgrade has come to the top in that sense, and that we did credit first. So something that can be profitable for our business and focus on the consumer who uses credit. You know, this is someone who carries a balance, kind of life happens to them, but they're familiar with borrowing. So we can provide a great rates to them, but also have a profitable business model.
What are sort of the top categories of consumer lending? Because I know that you guys are potentially looking into home improvement. You mentioned HELOC as well. What's sort of the growth driver for Upgrade right now?
Yeah, right now the biggest growth is happening in our home improvement and our indirect auto businesses. I think indirect auto is something that a lot of people left the space kind of during, you know, just recently. We're seeing rising delinquency and charge-offs across all consumer asset classes, I think coming out of 2022, including mortgage. So it's something that when we think about where we can serve the consumer, we also need to make sure we can serve up a good asset since we're not a balance sheet lender. The banks and credit unions, so that financial institutions element that I mentioned that purchase these assets need something that performs. So a collateralized loan, something like an auto product, very interesting for them. And then a home improvement because you are lending to a homeowner. You know, these aren't people that are, you know, seeking financing. It's they're already doing the home improvement project and then, you know, kind of looking to expand it, upgrade, and then perhaps get financing from the contractor.
Yeah, a lot of players moved out just because of they would get hit with so many compliance problems, the fines and stuff like that. Are you guys worried at all about those compliance issues?
Yeah, compliance is definitely an issue, I would say, in the fintech space with people, if they're kind of think of it as an afterthought. Compliance really needs to be at the forefront.
Looking
Compliance,
at you, Robin
yeah. Yeah, compliance enterprise risk, like it can't be an afterthought. It has to be the forefront of the business because you know, this is still lending and think about every regulators have made it very clear that they are coming for the banking as a service business. You know, that business is lucrative. You know, we work with a partner bank in terms of the who originates some of our products. So that would fall under that banking as a service business, and it's lucrative. So lots of people got into the space with compliance as an afterthought, and that's not going to work. So in our opinion, you know, it's lucrative because it's complicated. So I think some of the incumbents like WebBank, Cross River Bank, First Electronic, you know, they've got a great business model because it's not as easy as a lot of people kind of thought it was. So I think that business, you know, it's been a gray area. So regulators are coming out pretty strong, but also I think that clear guidance is going to help people. It'll only give, you know, more transparency to the business.
Yeah, if it's baked in, and yeah, it could be a competitive advantage. Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
So I worked in risk, so I'm always paranoid. I'm always afraid of the regulators. It's a key issue, and yeah, it could bring you down. But what is the biggest challenge for Upgrade in growing and moving forward? You mentioned compliance, but are there like you see the marketing, the growing partnerships? What's the next big step?
You know, I think continuing to launch new products that are good and you know, affordable for our consumers. So kind of after where we're at with, you know, the ones I mentioned, that would be our next step. But I think from where I sit, which is you know, a little different, you know, I'm not on the product team or kind of the strategy team. I cover our depositories. So for me, my biggest concern is always keeping those clients happy. So we serve about 210 banks and credit unions. So that's something very unique to Upgrade versus our competitors in the sense competitors may fund with the capital markets or hedge funds, securitization. We primarily fund with financial institutions. So it's great because they have a low cost of capital. It's a lot more compliance, kind of regulatory work. But as I mentioned, we're good at that. But the kind of concern and thing that I would say concern is not the right word, but the focus on is making sure the credit quality is rock solid. So as I mentioned, that consumer credit, that deterioration we've seen, you know, across consumer in 2022 is something my clients are hyper focused on. So how do we deliver not just to the consumer a great return, but to the investor a good asset? So the consumer is happy with their rate, they can make payments. And investors are happy with the return they're getting on the asset. So that's been our big focus. So we work with mostly credit unions, but some banks. So working on kind of tailored strategies for them is a big initiative for 2024, giving them a good mix of whether it's unsecured credit, secured credit, short duration, long duration, you know, prime, near prime. We want to make sure that they have a kind of diversified portfolio from us that works for them, for their institution, depending on their geography, their asset size. So getting real custom is kind of my big focus for 2024 with those partners.
So you actually see credit unions and banks as essentially partners rather than competitors, right?
Yeah, 1,000%. Definitely partners. I'd say credit unions kind of invented the signature loan before LendingClub invented the digital version of it. So they're very familiar with, you know, debt consolidation loan. And we have very complementary services. So in a sense, credit unions, you know, member-owned nonprofits don't pay taxes, very low cost of funds. So we can provide consumers even better rates on our products because we're funded by mostly credit unions. And then they can acquire digitally, you know, a safe from a fraud standpoint, credit risk standpoint, a new member, new asset. So credit unions love it. You know, they excel in a lot of things in terms of serving their members and their local field of memberships. But acquiring digitally, specifically in maybe geographies they don't have big presences, is a great way that we complement them. So those partnerships have been a huge part of the upgrade story.
Speaking of partnerships, you recently announced a partnership with a company called Fairplay, which essentially ensures fair lending. Can you walk me through that sort of from the assumption? Why do it, and what outcome do you hope to drive from this?
Yeah, great question. So although we do work with a partner bank, you know, they are responsible for the fair lending compliance in terms of originating the loan, this kind of plays into that circular reference of compliance. Because we work with so many depositories, for us to just point to our sponsor bank saying, you know, they're the bank, they took the risk, you should be comfortable, we really need to give them super transparent diligence and why we are comfortable as Upgrade, that our credit policy is fair from all true lending aspects. There's been a lot of, I would say, noise in the digital lending space where people perhaps have thousands of variables in a model. If they don't do kind of analysis like Upgrade is doing, there could be, you know, algorithmic redlining is something I heard once at a conference that was very concerning. So it's really to give our partners comfort, to give us comfort, to make sure that there isn't anything we should be concerned about on the fair lending side when we are working with a sponsor bank.
So it's fair lending like from a compliance perspective, not like a ESG or that kind of thing.
Correct. Yeah, from a compliance perspective to make sure. I mean, I'm sure there's elements of ESG to make sure, you know, the same borrower, regardless of, you know, zip code based on their credit profile, is getting the same rate, things like that in terms of fair lending. Because I know there's platforms out there that I think even ask where you went to school, like where you went to undergrad, and like that.
Wow.
Could be, yeah, exactly. So that could be a big compliance red flag. So things like that, just any element that couldn't be explained, any variable in the model that can't be explained, is things that, you know, those type of partnerships like Fair Play, that's what we're looking for, to make sure that everything is 100% compliant.
So were you a little concerned when the rates were shooting up that you'd have a test of your credit models? You mentioned the importance of that, of course, for every lender. But, you know, as the environment changes, and it's never like 100% like it was before, you kind of have to adapt. Did Upgrade have to kind of like pivot or adjust the products a bit to change with the times?
Yeah, extremely quickly. So that's, I would say, something that our bank partners also love is that we are fast. We're faster than a bank or credit union in terms of a rate sheet updates and responding to benchmarks, whether it's the Fed, Treasuries, kind of any overnight rates, swap rates, to make sure the asset's competitive. Because again, we're not a balance sheet lender. So if the loans are underpriced, nobody's buying them. So we were very, very quick to raise rates kind of as the market went up. But that's also something in the digital space with fintechs, you have to be very conscious of adverse selection. If they're the highest rate, you're getting the worst borrowers in some instances, depending on what channel you come through. A lot of us place platforms like Upgrade, we acquire consumers through platforms like Credit Karma, LendingTree, NerdWallet, and these are the most rate sensitive channels because people are shopping for credit. As I'm sure Steve knows with the HELOC adventure, at the end of the day, it's the rate. It could be,
Exactly.
well, like you mentioned, who you've banked with forever, but you're going to go with whoever shows you the best rate. So those channels, we were very, very cognizant of adverse selection. But in terms of moving our weighted average interest rates up, we were pretty much lockstep with the Fed to make sure the asset was at all times competitive. I think what more than rates kind of at that same time is the liquidity pressure was more painful for us because just the sheer speed of deposit outflows was something that the market had never seen. So that's hard for the banks and credit unions that buy loans from us that are, I love the program, I love the asset, but we don't have any liquidity. That was a bigger challenge.
Oh, that's kind of disconcerting to hear.
Right? Yes.
Especially after well, Silicon
During
Valley
SVB.
Bank or
Yeah.
some other issues that can, and you're getting your liquidity from them, right?
In terms of, yeah, any excess liquidity, like if they don't have loan demand, they would deploy with us. So I think we saw this, across the space, obviously with SVB, but then people wanted to shore up liquidity, make sure they had extra reserves kind of
Right.
during uncertain times. So it was a double whammy, like high cost of funds, more reserves, and then people moving, just consumers moving money so fast. There was an interesting, at least I think interesting, stat we heard about kind of the speed of rate increases and when that last happened versus the technology that existed at the time. So now, like rates are climbing, you're not earning anything on your savings account, and you see a high APY product like Upgrades paying 5%, you can move your money immediately that day. Versus, 20 years ago, you would have had to, go to the bank when they're open, get a check, go to the other bank when they're open, deposit it, wait 3 days. So the movement of money was extremely fast and concerned people, but also it couldn't have been moved as fast the last time rates went up like this. It was just
Right.
technologically impossible.
And the rumor mill, the TikTok viral video that tells you to go one way or the other is just
Exactly.
so different now. Is there any way to protect against that? I mean, if let's say something comes out and everyone can just hit a few buttons to move money out, is there a way to do anything about that?
Yeah, that kind of plays into the stickiness of consumers. So, like when I think about Upgrades consumers, the people that use our loan products, pretty sticky in the sense, we're servicing the loan, they make their payments to us. Some have multiple products, personal loan and a card, et cetera. That is a very different consumer than the one that uses our high APY savings. That consumer goes to the highest bidder. So although like there's a difference, very big difference in stickiness, the high rate person is very, very predictable. So I think that's something important when you think about customer segmentation is like, although they're not very sticky, they're very predictable. You raise the rate, they come back. You lower the rate, they
The hot money,
Yeah.
so that part of it, the hot part is pretty easy to model. And then the rest is just the relationship you're building.
Exactly.
So how do you do that? How do you keep that strong connection with the customer?
Yeah, I mean, we've got, let's see, I don't want to say 1,000, but something like that in terms of 700 people at our Phoenix call center, in terms of focusing on customer service, servicing very, very kind of immediate attention on the call wait times, things like that. So we try to have kind of, I think our NPS score is high 70s, low 80s. And when you look at traditional banks, it's in the 30s. So we really try and keep that net promoter score and our consumers very happy with us, such that they come
Well, that's a
back.
huge difference. If I was in the market, I guess I would compare. Let's put in Wells Fargo and Robinhood and have that our peer group to compare against.
Yeah.
But who else out there do you think is doing a good job of, I guess, customer service and, not to promote anybody else, but
Yeah.
any other fintechs out there?
Well, not to promote a competitor, but I actually bank with SoFi. I get 30 basis points on my checking account and I think 4.5 on my savings account. And they never take credit products from them and they lose money on me. But I love their high
Good
yield
job,
everything.
Rebecca. That's a
Yeah.
good sign. Have the
But
VCs pay for your for the loss, right?
yeah, so it's kind of a, do you think that, they build that relationship with me. So I've banked with them for some time. I bought a house, after banking with them for at least 3 years. I did inquire on the mortgage rate, and then I went with, a broker because it was way cheaper. So I think it comes down to you build that relationship, but you have to retain them on the best financial product. And that's where, I got lost. However, I still bank with them and absolutely love their banking services. I just don't know how they monetize me.
Advertising.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good
Advertising.
point. See
Sell your
that, and
data.
that's out of my wheelhouse. I only know lending.
Speaking of ads, it's interesting how it seems like for a lot of these lending products or credit products rather, a lot of the customers come through mail, right? I know that I get a bunch of mail offers, and I saw a report by the Fed recently highlighting how so much of the customer acquisition for both fintechs and sort of the more web bank type lenders comes through the mail. How is that still an effective way to get customers?
Yeah, it's when I entered the fintech space kind of in 2018, I heard that stat, maybe it was 2019, that fintech consumer installment personal loan mailers surpassed credit card mailers. And I thought that was just the most insane thing I'd ever heard, that in this high-tech space we're doing more mailing than Chase and all these other people combined.
That's so funny you say that. Yeah, I get those all the time. There's probably three or four in my trash right now.
It must
But
mean carrying a balance on your credit card.
I guess. I never made that connection between snail mail and someone that's saying they're a high-tech alternative lender and all that. That's such a weird disconnect.
Yeah, it's interesting. We do about, I would say, 10% of our originations come from direct mail. So it's still small in terms of percentage of where we're getting consumers, but we do some. It's definitely the most expensive acquisition channel, but you reach people that potentially aren't shopping for credit, but have carried a balance and they don't know how to refinance it. So a fun exercise I like is if you Google, how do I refinance my credit card debt? You are not going to find Wells Fargo, Bank of America, et cetera. You're going to find Upgrade and all of our competitors. So direct mail has a nice halo effect to that. They see the name, they're online, and then we get some fairly decent conversion from it. What I really like about direct mail, though, it always helps me know how much the average cost of customer acquisition is for a financial product without having to do extensive research, because it's $500 to open an account, it's $700 to open an account, now it's $1,000. So that's always a fun benchmark on. That's how much it costs to acquire the customer, if that's how much they're willing to pay you.
We always like to discuss how regulations can affect fintechs, but this is especially the case or especially important when you get into the lending and debt space. But is there anything that you would love to sort of strike with a magic wand of how we do business in the US, either from a lending or a credit perspective?
I mean, it's coming from Upgrade. We are, like I said, we are so compliance first just because we're depository focused in terms of our partnership. So you know, a hedge fund, they care about the last basis point in the loan. They don't care about your, you know, SCRA intake policy. But banks and credit unions do. So we have always just been the leader in terms of like compliance, policy and procedure sharing with our FIs. So I don't have any concerns on it, you know, at Upgrade or in ours, but I could see new entrants to the market, just definitely not having the chops for such a sophisticated system. You know, our chief compliance officer was previously a regulator, joined us from Promontory. So we just have a very sophisticated infrastructure, but I mean, that takes time and initiative. I think he was like the sixth hire or something at Upgrade. So it really needs to be a priority.
Yeah, you really focused on these issues and growing out. What mistake do you see other fintechs making that you're like, wow, they probably shouldn't do that, or that's maybe they're going to run into trouble?
You know, I think one is, you know, I think I mentioned, but monetizing the customer, like just serving the underbanked who you're never going to lend to. You have to have there has to be another plan on how you're going to monetize. I think that's a big thing. The second is lending as an afterthought. You know what I mean? It has to kind of come first in that sense. I think those are the biggest. The other thing is really just kind of saturation. Like the personal loan debt consolidation product, I would say that market is saturated. So when I see new lenders that are offering that product, you know, that monoline product, that's just, you know, the market for that is fully saturated with people like us, people like Lending Club, you know, Prosper that you mentioned. We've all been in the space a long time, know how to do it really well. I think new entrants for old products like that make no sense to me.
Yeah, I haven't seen lately where there was some kind of lending or banking products that are very like affinity oriented, like focused on Native Americans or Asian Americans. And then maybe they're using alternative. There was a lot of hype about alternative lending using different parameters, like your Facebook posts or some you know, very non-traditional things. But I guess there's a model that works. And then there's everything else, maybe, that's not as correlated.
Yeah, like using the Facebook post, I don't know how you explain that to a regulator.
Yeah, right. With a regulator with a deep frown, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there was a lot of that, like, oh, we're going to use these other models. We're unleashing all this data that's out there that's correlated to good payment history. Have you seen where that's just kind of like not really effective? It's not a great model.
Yeah, I have. I have heard, you know, from some of our competitors where they're, you know, they boast the AI is better serves all these populations, but then, you know, a regulator, somebody comes in, does a fair lending review, and it actually does the opposite. So that's why I think control over the AI is so important, to make sure, you know, the bot doesn't get away from itself and do something outside of compliance realm. So we like to say, you know, we're very sophisticated. We use machine learning, you know, a component of AI, but we purposely limit the number of variables so things like that don't happen.
Yeah, it definitely can't be a black box, right? You got to explain every aspect.
Exactly. And that's something, you know, we've come to peace with just because we have so many, as I said, banks and credit unions. They need to explain to their regulators the credit box. So it can't be a black box. We have to share it with them.
Right, right. Yeah, they get so kind of upset where you don't know why you turned this down. That's not a great answer.
Yeah, because even though we're not directly regulated, since we're not a bank or a credit union, but they are.
Yeah, you can't quite get away from it all the way. Are there any dream companies that you would like to partner with for whatever reason? You're like, they're doing a great job. They're in a market we want to be in. I would love to work with them.
Yeah, so this one is a Rebecca Bacon dream, not an Upgrade dream.
Okay.
But I would say it's Walmart. I think people, Walmart has done, at least in my mind, some very impressive things, less impressive things on the acquisition side and like kind of corporate strategy. But their grasp of the US consumer, I find just the reach is so deep.
Their data is amazing. Yeah.
The data is amazing. They do so much that's fundamentally important to the consumer in the US in terms of groceries. They bank a lot of the undocumented in terms of their kind of transfer and check cashing services and all those things. Like their reach is just, I think, beyond scope of what a lot of people imagined. So I don't know what that type of partnership would look like. You know, I know Affirm partners with them at point of sale. That's not necessarily how I think about it. I think it's more of how to, you know, I know the Bank of Walmart has tried and failed a few times, but I'm still hopeful that they could get that customer base they have, you know, the upgrade world of financial products.
Yeah, more comprehensive than just the checkout. Just be their banking, their expert partner, huh?
Exactly.
Well, that's a big dream, Walmart. Yeah, and like you said, they pulled back on their banking license a while ago, and then they were working with banking partners.
Yeah, it kind of breaks my heart because I watched them. You know, they've had some really expensive hires, and they tried, and they stop, and then try something new, and then. I think they're in a lawsuit right now with, I forget, it's a card provider they signed. They have just so much potential and they fall on their face with it.
They're waiting for you.
Yeah.
They're waiting for an upgrade.
Yeah, the Waltons listen. So Rebecca Bacon, by the way.
Thanks, John.
Well, great. Well, I hope your dream does come true. We'll be watching the news for you and Walmart. Actually, and then we'll definitely have you back when you guys make that announcement.
Yeah. CEO of Walmart Bank, Rebecca Bank.
Yeah. Rebecca shaking hands, right?
Now, upgrade in Walmart partnership. That's the dream.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, they're shaking hands and making a deal. All right. Well, we wish you all the best and keep up the good work. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Thank you, Steve. This has been very enjoyable.
Yeah. Thank you. That's Rebecca Bacon, head of Financial Institutions Group. At Upgrade, please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.